Well, it's hard to believe 30 years since the Peach Bowl, and we're celebrating that with our segment we're doing all season long, and that's the Peach of the Season. And Bubba, we're very excited. Another great one, especially a guy that was at the game on Saturday. How about that?
Yeah, Dave, throughout the fall of 2021, you know, we're catching up with a variety of people from that 1991 season. We talked to strength and conditioning coach Jeff Connors within the last 2 to 3 weeks. And now I'm very excited to be joined by one of the starting linebackers on that team, Ken Burnett. Ken, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, Bubba. Thank you for having me. And Dave, you as well. Everything is well. Thank you.
You know, Ken, we're going to talk obviously about Peach Bowl, but just want to get your thoughts since it's been a few days after that great victory over Tulane. You have the Pirates who are now 3-2. They've won three straight. Give me your thoughts on not only the season, but also you were in that locker room. So tell Pirate Nation, you got it behind the scenes kind of feel right after the game.
Yeah. So, you know, the win streak is nice that we're on for sure. We attended the App State game here in Charlotte, and not the result that we wanted, but it's always great to see the Pirates play, and that was a fun time. But down there in Greenville on Saturday, just an awesome environment. It was great to be back in Dowdy Ficklin Stadium again, and I really loved what I saw on the field. The guys are flying around. They're playing with intensity and passion. And it was a fun game to watch. And then, you know, I had a great opportunity after the game, as you mentioned, to step into the locker room for a minute. And it was really nice to be back in there. It's been quite a while since I've been in a post-game environment like that. And just to brought back a lot of memories and to see the guys, you know, certainly happy about the win and excited about what's ahead of them. It was really nice to be in there.
Now, Ken, talk about your relationship with East Carolina third-year head coach Mike Houston, because Coach Houston talked about you being in the locker room in addition to Parmalee, and he just said that he had a friendship with you that, you know, went back some years, and with both of you being from the mountains in North Carolina.
Yeah, so it's interesting. That's where it all started. Obviously, we have this Western North Carolina connection for sure. And when Coach Houston got the job, I think they were doing the Pirate Armada here in Charlotte, and unfortunately, I was unable to make it. But I had a prior commitment that evening. But Coach reached out to me and just said hello and mentioned that he missed that I couldn't be there and would love to catch up in the future. So that kind of reconnected us a little bit, and we stayed in touch. And that's kind of what led to the invitation on Saturday to join them in the locker room after the big win there.
Ken, talk about that relationship you have with Mike Houston. Obviously, the three guys on the show, and now we've added some more for the playback with the likes of AT and Matt Semenza. But talk about the relationship with him and just, I mean, he's a great guy. He's really built this program. The one thing, Ken, that I've noticed, I've been talking about all season long, is the depth that we have that we haven't had in the last handful of years.
Mm-hmm. Well, Coach Houston, we're cut from the same cloth, I think, in a lot of manners there. So we view the game in a very similar sense, and we have similar beliefs in the way the game should be played. And that's why Saturday was so special for me, certainly, because we played, in my opinion, the Pirate brand of football that, at least from my perspective, the way it ought to be played. So, you know, it was awesome. And he preaches that we're going to come downhill and we're going to hit you in the mouth and we're not going to back down. And, you know, the guys are buying into that. You can see that showing up on the field. And so it's really cool. You know, we didn't stay in touch there for a long time, 20-some years, actually. I ran into we went to Freeboot. I'm going to diverge here real quick. But Friday night, we went to Freeboot Friday, I think they call it there. And as we walked up, Coach Houston was addressing the crowd there. And so I recognized the voice, obviously, and I walked over and had a chance to chat with him there real briefly, but it was good to reconnect and with him. So it's been a long time, some distance in between us there, but certainly I'm very happy to have him as part of Pirate Nation here.
Ken, you talk about reconnecting. Here recently in the last week or so, an announcement was made by ECU Athletics as far as the Letter Winners Club. Just give us your thoughts on that. And then also, you know, this football staff specifically and what this administration and football coaching staff, the way they're going about things. I know they've made it a priority to reach out to letter winners like yourself and involve them, you know, whether it's an open door, an invitation to come watch practice if they're in the Greenville area, or, you know, to let them know when they're going to be in town for a game and, you know, maybe opportunities like what Coach Houston provided you post-game will be on the team.
Yeah, so that's, you know, I love that, number one. So the you referenced the letter winner chapter of the Pirate Club, and they rolled that out, I believe, Friday prior to the game, that it was a new offering that they had for former East Carolina athletes. And you know, I'm a big believer in keeping that fraternity feel of the team and the program. You spend 5 years there, and it's in close quarters, and it's a daily thing, and you become like a family. And, you know, I came in 87. Finished playing, obviously, in the Peach Bowl in 92. So throughout those 5 years, I had guys that were seniors when I got there, and then I had guys that were freshmen when I left. So that's a pretty long time frame of relationships that are developed. And I think it's critical, and that's what I love about this staff and this administration and the folks in the Pirate Club, what they're trying to do, and that's to reconnect everyone. There, like I said, there's that fraternity, and it's unique. You don't get it anywhere else. That locker room is very special, very unique. And if anyone's ever been in there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I love that they're trying to reconnect people with the program. I think it's good for the players that are there to see players that have been there, have walked in their shoes, know exactly what they're going through, and whether, you know, they're addressing the team in a formal manner or not, just to see them hanging around and being part of the program. And you know, Coach Houston, there were several guys. I played in the Pirate Club golf tournament on Friday, but several of my teammates, former teammates, took an opportunity to go by the football offices and you know, got to see Coach Houston, walked around the facilities. You know, that sort of thing is awesome, and I'm so glad that he's open to doing that. I just think it's huge for a program.
No doubt about it. Ken, one of the things I thought about you a few weeks ago about the very 1990 season we talked. I know that we've talked about the foundation. In fact, if people want to hear that whole interview we did with you, I believe it was 3 years ago we did, but two or three years ago, but talk about one of the reasons, and we're going to talk about the peach of the season, but that 1990 squad that had the foundation, so many people on that team that laid the groundwork for the Peach Bowl. It made me think about you guys, because this particular team, you don't want to compare eras and teams, but this team has a special feel to it. Now, I wouldn't say the Peach Bowl kind of feel, but maybe the season before the Peach Bowl. How do you feel about that?
You know, that's – I wish I was a little closer to get that feel. Not that I don't feel that. I've just not been as close as I would like. But there's something about this team that I've noticed in the games that I've seen, and I think you're onto something there. This team has no quit in them that I've seen. Like I said earlier, they fly around, and they just find a way to make it happen. I mean, Coach Houston made a comment in the locker room that, you know, coming out of the half, the tide turned a little bit, but you know what? We got stops. We put points on the board. We just would not be denied the win, and that's similar to our team. We were very much a bend but don't break team, especially on the defensive side. We talked about that a lot in the huddle, pre-snap type things, and I kind of sense that from this group. You know, they've been through through some tough times. They've had some adversity and some turnover in coaching staff, et cetera. But, you know, I think they're beginning to find a way, and they're beginning to believe and get that mentality that, hey, you know, we can compete, we can play with anybody that's on the field. And that's when the magic starts to happen, is when you get that belief.
No doubt about it. And in those 1989 and 1990 seasons under Coach Lewis, we won 5 games each season. I think technically on one of those was went down in season record books, you know, because of a forfeit. But 5 games were won in each of those years on the field, but you had near misses against Georgia, like 19-15, I think it was, and up at Pittsburgh, 47-42, on a last-second field goal at Syracuse, something weird, like 18-16. But just talk about all those close calls against tremendous ranked teams, or very close to ranked teams on the road. And then finally in 1991, just everything that Coach Lewis and that coaching staff did to get that program over the hump. Also had some tremendous leadership with the likes of Jeff Blake, Robert Jones, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bubba, first off, you've got the most amazing memory of anybody I've ever been around in my life. That's crazy that you remember all that stuff. Sometimes I can't remember what I had for breakfast. But, no, you're exactly right. Yeah, we here's my mentality.
Yes, I've been told many times that I'm sick. I honestly, yeah.
So, when, and I think this was shared across the program. This is something that to me is unique about being a Pirate, especially back in the late 80s where we were, I'm not going to say we were struggling for an identity, but we were independent, didn't have a conference to hang our hat on. It was just a different time. And so every Saturday was an opportunity to prove that we belonged. And we stepped on the field, and it didn't matter who we were playing. Miami, Florida State, South Carolina, Virginia Tech, whoever it was, Georgia, you referenced those guys. We stepped on the field, and we had an expectation that we were going to win. We didn't look across the field and see, like, man, we're in an SEC stadium against a strong SEC team, and we're between the hedges, and look at all this cool stuff. I mean, there was none of that. I mean, it was a business trip, and we were there to hit somebody in the mouth, and that's the mentality that we had. So, We came to win, and I'm not saying other teams don't, but that's just the mindset, I think, of Pirate football that's kind of the tradition of it. So to play those games close, like you referenced, it was no surprise to anyone. Maybe surprised everybody outside of the East Carolina locker room, but it didn't surprise us. The thing we missed, I think, was consistency. Sometimes we would play maybe to the level of the competition a little bit, and that's just a maturity thing. But you referenced Jeff Blake, Robert Jones. You know, we had some guys on that team, and looking back on it, you know, 30 years later, there was some really special talent on that team. I mean, you don't recognize it at the time. It's just like anything else you're in the middle of. You really don't see it when it's happening. But you look back, and Robert had, what, a 15, 16-year career in the NFL, which is long by any standard, even for a kicker. And my man played inside linebacker in the NFL for a very long time at a very high level. That is amazing. So that just speaks to the talent that somebody like a Robert Jones had. And then you fill in around him with role players, if you will, which we had a bunch of, but we all understood it was a team effort. Everybody had a job to do. Everybody believed in the guy beside them. They were going to get their job done. And that's when the thing starts happening. So, Coach Lewis laid the groundwork for sure for that 91 season and those couple of seasons up to it. Had some tough knocks and some tough losses there, but we never stopped believing that, you know, we can play with anybody, and then things just clicked in that 91 year.
They most definitely did. You talk about the makeup of that team as far as – and then obviously Luke Fisher won a tremendous year, as well as a Peach Bowl game that he had. I think something like 12 receptions, just absurd numbers for a tight end in those years. But and definitely, in my opinion, the best receiving tight end ever at East Carolina. But just talk And Coach Lewis had come from Georgia. He had been a defensive coordinator on Coach Dooley's staff down there, been a part of so much success, and you were a linebacker on that team. So just talk about Coach Lewis. I'm sure he was the head coach, but he had really spent, I think, his entire career on the defensive side of the ball. So just talk about his mentality there and his, you know, intention as far as instilling the discipline and everything necessary to have success.
Yeah, so I love Coach Lewis. Awesome coach, awesome person as well, and really did a lot for me. And it was great to see him. I think we had that 25th anniversary celebration at a game down in Greenville, and Coach Lewis was able to come back. So I got to spend some time with him, and that was really great to see him. But, yeah, he was
– Yeah, that's actually against NC State.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Dang, there goes that memory again.
Back in 2016.
Dang, yeah. You killed me with that. two things I remember about Coach Lewis. One, he was meticulous in the details.
I mean, we would kid around sometimes in the meeting room that we're going to practice a scenario with
So the wind's at 3.5 miles an hour out of the southeast, and the sun's behind the clouds, and the level of detail he went to prepare us was just mind-blowing at times. But that was a good thing. You know, we're 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, leave us to ourselves, and we're going to fail horrendously. So we needed a guy like that, and he was the man for the job. And the second thing I remember about Coach Lewis is he was an intense guy, and we had physical practices. We would go ones-on-ones during the season, inside drill, goal line, not every day. He would typically dial it back on, certainly on a Wednesday, and not every week. But there were times where whether it was the team we were playing and he wanted to get our attention, or there was something that was missing and he wanted to make sure we got it corrected. I don't know what the trigger was for that, but we had some intense physical practices during the season. And you know, as a player, you're like, golly, hey, what are we doing out here? We're beating the crap out of each other. But he knew what he was doing, and he had us ready to play come Saturday. So, you know, Coach Lewis at the time, absolute right man for the job, no doubt about it. All the guys, it's that love-hate relationship. You know, it's your, mom that makes you eat your vegetables. It's your dad that makes you, mow the yard, and it's your coach that runs you and makes you do the things that you don't want to do, but you know in the long run are good for you. And that was Coach Lewis. So, you know, highly respected by all the team, everyone on the team, and, you know, well thought of too. And you know, that 25 year anniversary, it was great to see guys come up to him and just share their appreciation and gratitude for everything he did for us as a team and individually.
You talk about the running. I mentioned a moment ago in the opening of this segment, just as far as how Jeff Connors, he was coming in prior to that 91 season. What are your memories of Coach Connors? And just talk about the running as well as the other workouts that Coach C put you through.
That, you know, I don't remember a lot of specifics, Bubba, but I'm telling you, like you, I don't have that steel trap memory, but I do remember that Coach Connors did not play. He demanded respect right off the bat, and he got it. And if you did not give it to him, he would make sure that he got it. But we would run. So two of his favorites were 300s for time, and with a certain amount of time of rest in it. And then we also did a lot of gassers. I remember at the Peach Bowl, we practiced, you know, a week down in Atlanta leading up to the game. And the first couple of days of practice, if I recall correctly, I mean, he ran us to death. I thought people were about to throw up out there. We were running so much. I said, what are we doing this last game of the season? If we're not in shape by now, we're not going to be in shape. But he was getting your mind off of vacation mode because everybody had been home for Christmas and back into game mode. You know, that's that was his intent there, and it worked. So love Coach Connors, you know, great in the weight room as well. You know, I was only under him, I think, that one season, maybe two. I can't remember when exactly he got there. But, you know, great strength coach, great coach all the way around, great motivator, and earns your respect for sure across the board.
So after those near misses that you've referenced, we've referenced in those 89 and 90 seasons, starting the 91 year, you lost that nail biter, you know, you fell behind 38-10, battle back, really should have had a chance to win that was taken from you by the officiating crew on a celebration penalty up there at Illinois, lost 38-31. But, you know, what are your memories of the early parts of that season? Because you bounce back and come home and beat Memphis State, who had just won out at Southern Cal.
Yeah, so, you know, we went up to Illinois, and it was a pretty big deal because that game was on ESPN, and that was not a common thing back in 91. I mean, there was only there may have been ESPN2. I'm not 100% sure on that, if that was a thing yet or not. But to be on TV, especially for East Carolina to be on TV, was huge. You had ESPN, and you had the networks, and I think that's pretty much it. So it was a big deal for us, and we were very excited to have the opportunity to play on TV. You know, we went up there and had every expectation of winning, as we did, as I shared a minute ago. You know, things didn't go that way, and that was an unfortunate penalty for sure. You know, would we have scored had that penalty not happened? Who knows? But I do think this. I think that loss really set the tone for the season in the sense of a couple of things. First off, we can play with anybody. We proved it today. And secondly, I think it made us a little more hungry coming into that second week against Memphis there. So while it was tough to stomach at the time, I think there was in the team's mind, it was like, okay, I think we have something here. I think we're on to something. I mean, we knew we were going to be pretty good. We had a lot of returners. But, you know, we was coming off a five-win season and off another five-win season. So while we believed, we still had to see some fruit coming, if you know what I mean. And so that was the beginning of that. And we're like, okay, I think we're on to something here, and let's go see what this next week holds for us.
Such time, amount of time, you know, in the game could have been in 23-3. But moving on to the season, you had the big win over South Carolina, first time Carolina had ever beaten the Gamecocks. I think that got the program, or that team, I should say, to 3-1. And then the snowball just continued to roll downhill, and you went up to the Carrier Dome. I referenced the last-second field goal loss 2 years earlier. Then you took care of business against the Orange. So what are your memories of that one up there in the Carrier Dome?
You know, that was there's a lot of great memories up there. You know, about that game, and that there's some pretty cool video footage of it too, which helps me remember that, by the way. But you know, we the Carrier Dome's super cool to play in. It's a very unique thing. They had a good fan base, and my recollection was it was a sellout crowd. I don't know. I think that's 50,000-55,000 they put in there, something like that. So it's loud in there. But we had – it was that same thing defensively anyway. It was a bend but don't break. We kept coming up with plays and stops when we needed them. And so I remember, you know, I think Jeff made a long run on a broken play and scored. I remember Deion Johnson returned a kick for a touchdown, I think. And we had a couple big sacks there at the end of the game, I believe, between maybe Zime and Greg Gardell, Bernard Carter, those guys. And we had a nice goal line stop down there at some point, too. Those are the things that kind of stick out in my mind about that. But the thing that I'll never forget is so we get on the plane, we come back to Kinston, and this is the first time this had ever happened in my career. So we get off the plane and we walk through into the airport, and there's people everywhere, and they're cheering and holding signs. It was so weird, but awesome at the same time, because that never happened. But it was so cool to see those people that took, you know, they take their Saturday night, they drive out to Kinston to the airport to welcome us home. That was really awesome. You know, I mean, if I could thank each one of those people that were there, I would personally thank them, because it was really cool. And I think that's about the time that we broke into the top 25, if I'm not mistaken. And which, again, that was a barrier broken, if you will, because now we've been legitimized by the media. We're talked about in the news a little bit, and who is this East Carolina group over here that's only got one loss here in like week five or six. So it was cool. That was a cool game, most notably for the airport, though, really. And then we get on the bus and go back to campus, and cars are following us back to campus and driving by us and blowing horns and stuff. It was nuts. It was cool.
You read my mind. That's the reason I wanted to bring that game up, besides it being the first victory over a ranked opponent on the road, because of the scene when you got back to the airport. You just said it was nuts. And you referenced the media a minute ago as the season began to turn into what it was, you know, 5-1, I think, at that point after that win at Syracuse, you know, really getting a lot of attention, which was very abnormal. You know, Lee Corso, either was already or very there short after, was betting against the Pirates. So just, you always hear the term ignoring the noise. So give us a glimpse behind the scenes. What did Coach Lewis and that staff, or, you know, some of the senior leadership do to keep everybody focused and not reading the press clippings, and losing focus?
Yeah. No, that's a great question. I will say this. I do not envy the guys playing today at East Carolina or anywhere, because of social media and the way that everything's filmed and everybody's a critic. And it would be really, really tough to play today. So my hat's off to those guys. They can navigate all that stuff as well as they do. So back in the day, it was pretty much you had ESPN on TV and you had a newspaper and Sports Illustrated. So It was minimized, but still, yes, it was out there. It was a noise. It was a distraction. But Coach Lewis did a great job navigating that with us. I mean, we were a team that was fairly mature in the sense that we were heavy on upperclassmen. But that don't mean any of us had been there before. So it was all new for us. And each week, probably starting about the Pitt game after Syracuse, give or take in there, maybe with the Syracuse game, but we would come into the locker room and there would be a T-shirt hanging in our locker, and they were all different. And I've got them, every one, to this day. I've still got them at home. My wife thinks I'm crazy, but I'd never give them up. So the narrative on one of them was it had a target on it, and it said something to the effect of "Hit me with your best shot." And Coach Lewis's talking points around that was like, "Look, now you're out there. It's no longer a secret. You're in the crosshairs. You're going to get everybody's best shot. So you're not going to sneak up on anybody anymore. So you better prepare every week and come ready to play on Saturday." And I think that's what drove some of those physical practices that I referenced earlier. He just wanted to make sure that, look, guys, we're not going to get caught up in this hype. We're going to be ready to play come Saturday, and we're going to take care of business when we step on the field. And, so that's one way he managed it. I'm sure there's a lot more that I can't remember, or maybe it was so nuance that I didn't catch it because I was young and not very tuned in to what's going on at that time. But he did a great job, you know, taking care of all that because there was a ton of noise, ton of excitement, which is awesome as a player. Really cool to see the buzz around what's going on with the program. But from a coaching staff, I can see why that's a double-edged sword that they really have to guard against.
Yeah, no doubt. Last week, early in the interview, we talked about the Pirates playing Tulane. Tulane came to town. That's the first time East Carolina had ever played Tulane, if I'm not mistaken. And Tulane gave us everything we wanted. And then some Pirates went on to win a fairly close ball game by 10 points. And then went down to Hattiesburg. Southern Miss really been a nemesis to East Carolina and got an early lead. And then Pirates came back and won that one by 4 touchdowns. And the game that Lee Corso and some of the folks at ESPN kept saying that East Carolina would stub its toe was that trip to Blacksburg, Lane Stadium. In the first half, trailed by a couple touchdowns, got a big score right before the break. And then what are your memories of were you on the field when the pick six by Greg Granderson that tied the ball game and eventually, you know, just really changed the complexion of the game? Give us your memories of that play.
It's funny you say that because we were just talking about that last weekend down in the room. So, yes, I was on the field. And if you ever go back and watch that clip, it's one of the funniest things you've ever seen. So, Eugene Chung.
Now that I ask you that, I remember you running down the sideline with him.
Yeah. So, Eugene Chung, offensive tackle. I think he played in the NFL for a while. Greg Granderson catches it. I was kind of covering the curl area, and I think they overthrew the guy.
Lands in Greg's hands. Here he goes.
So I'm running behind him down the field, and it becomes apparent he's going to score. I'm probably on the 10-yard line, 15-yard line maybe at this time. It becomes apparent he's going to score. So I throttle it down a little bit. I got my hand up in the air, and Eugene Chung comes barreling from behind me, jumps on my back, and just pile drives me right into the ground on about the 2-yard line. And I was like, what in the world? And I tell you what, we watched film on Sunday on that. They must have rolled that back 15 or 20 times, and everybody on the team got the biggest kick out of that. It was
funny looking off film.
And that's one of my most non-kind of football-related memories of that game up in Blacksburg that day. But it was on that play, Greg, pick six. And so I made the bloopers reel, I guess, if you will, on that particular play. But I remember my sister lived in Blacksburg at the time, and that was actually the closest game to my hometown that we played that season. So I had a lot of family and friends come up for that game, which is really nice to be able to play in front of them. You know, great win up there as well. And that was just, you know, I think had a couple good defensive stops there, not me in particular, but as a unit, and you know, the offense produced again. And it's just another great win up there, and that was special because Virginia Tech has a good program for sure. Even back then, they had really had a good team.
And after that victory, Pirates were of course extended the invite to the Peach Bowl, which we immediately accepted, and then the following week we had to go to Cincinnati and. Cincinnati in those years, for the most part, I mean, they would occasionally play somebody like Penn State or someone tough. But all in all, they were struggling and nothing like the Cincinnati of today that's in the top 10. But went up there. It was in the rain. There was absolutely nobody in attendance. And Pirates were playing from behind a big part of that ball game. And then another one of your fellow linebackers, J-Dog, Jerry Dillon, yep. Got that pick six to seal the deal.
J-Dog, he sure did. Jerry, love Jerry Dillon. He's an awesome, awesome man, awesome husband and dad today. But a great football player back then for sure. And Jerry, I think, slipped under an out or something like that and pick six back in the end zone, about 40, 50 yards. He took that one, I believe, to the house. But you hit it spot on there. It was a gray, nasty day. You know, we really didn't play well. I don't think we looked past them at all. But I think there began to be a lot of pressure on us. We could feel the sense of the program kind of riding on our shoulders, and we had something special going, and that's tough. I mean, again, I give Coach Lewis and that staff a ton of credit that they were able to manage that none of us on that team had ever been through anything like that. But, you know, you start to get all these pats on the back on campus, and we're on ESPN and we're in the news, and you know, it was a yeoman's task for Coach Lewis to keep us dialed in. But I do think that particular game, you know, I'm not going to say we weren't ready, but it was just maybe a combination of, you know, the season culminating, the pending, the bowl thing, a lot of expectations, and we're setting records for number of wins, and we're ranked, and a lot of those things that made it tough to kind of take care of our business the way we would have wanted to. But in the end, you know, the bend don't break mentality, and we were able to come out of there with a win and turn our attention to Atlanta.
Earlier you talked about Coach Connors and what he did to get everyone's attention and make sure that they understood as a business trip from playing NC State. After that series had been canceled following the 1987 game, which you were a part of, I guess it's a redshirt freshman, correct? Or excuse
that's
me,
correct.
It's a true freshman, actually. But
yes, that's right.
True freshman. Point being that you were redshirted, I guess, and did not play in that game. If I recall correctly, but yep. So with that being said, you know, a lot of going into a bowl game, and there are so many events that are taking place in association with the bowl during bowl week, and just give us a glimpse behind the scenes of what was the, you know, what were the tempers like, or what was the mood like with East Carolina and NC State there in Atlanta, maybe, you know, different, a lot of times you'll see bowling or chicken wing eating contest or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the bowl experience. Obviously, everybody on the team, it was a new thing for them. One stark difference that I noticed in Atlanta between the East Carolina and North Carolina State teams, we thoroughly enjoyed every activity they had for us, and we were all in. The whole team was there, enjoying themselves to the fullest. And this is just me, and this could be wrong. My sense was that State felt like, you know, we should be at a better bowl, or we shouldn't be playing East Carolina. And they were kind of, to me, again, this is the way I took it. I could be completely wrong, but felt like they were just kind of going through the motions and really didn't want to be there and didn't have any respect for us and you know, thought they should be in a better spot. So, but chicken wing contest, East Carolina wins. Hula hoop relay contest, East Carolina wins. You name it, we whipped them all week long in everything we did. And we had a great time doing it. And so the funny thing is, I've got I'm telling my age here, but way back when you had these VHS cameras, so nobody had a phone that they filmed everything with. But I filmed a lot of those things that we did. And it's funny to go back and look at that. And I mean, the East Carolina guys were just tearing it up, having a ball at everything we did. And State's just kind of mulling around a little bit. You know, it's just a different vibe. But so all those things were awesome. Had a great time with it. But again, when we stepped on the field, Coach Connors brought us back to reality that, hey, we're down here to take care of some business. So don't you guys get too far out of line.
One of the things going into that game, when we went back, of course, I was in attendance, but we, you know, recorded it on ESPN and going back and listening to Ron Franklin and Mike Godfrey's call, the lead into the telecast, it had Hunter Gallimore, Robert Jones, different players speaking from East Carolina. And then it had, I want to say, maybe it was an offensive lineman named Scott Adele or something from NC State. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, he had Billy Ray Haynes, a very, very good linebacker for the Wolfpack. Mm-hmm. But both of those individuals, tremendous players, as I've already stated, but they were very, like you said, very, very confident in that the Wolfpack were going to win that game. And they said, as you know, we've always had the better team when it comes to NC State and East Carolina in football. And they're going to have to prove to us on the field that that is not the case. Was there any trash talk behind the scenes like that at those events? So, you know, not necessarily those guys, but just in general, not naming names, but.
Yeah, not that I know of, Bubba. That may not be a media savvy answer, but yeah, I didn't see any. We were just enjoying ourselves, you know. We were there to drink it in. It was a first for everybody there that was wearing purple and gold, and we, like I said, we enjoyed the heck out of that thing. You know, there may have been something here and there that I didn't witness or was not party to, but from my perspective, you know, we hung out, we did our thing, we enjoyed the events, and you know, then went back to the hotel or went back to the practice field and took care of our business.
So as we begin to wrap this up, and got to talk about how that game unfolded, nip and tuck game in the first half, then Pirates trailed 34-17 there with 7.5 minutes or so to play. I think it was something like, 7:41 or something like that. I left on the clock, but that's something I just remember. You know, it was just – you never had the sense that the game was over, much like that Miami game in 1999. The Pirate fans chanting "We Believe" and doing the O-E-O, and that chant just remarkable, the 30,000+ fans in attendance at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium.
Yeah, it was, you know, you're spot on there. It was the same narrative of the whole year. You know, it's hard to explain, but there was just this belief that we had that no matter what it looked like, we was going to be okay. And that was actually a little, a phrase we used in the defensive huddle, that, you know, we're not hurt here, even though, I mean, it might be second and two, but hey, we're not hurt, let's keep playing and turn this thing around. And we felt that way as a team, and you know, we certainly believed in Jeff, Luke, Cedric Van Buren, Hunter, Zof, all those guys on the offensive side, David Daniels, that could get it done over there. And we had the horses on defense too. So, you know, there was never any panic. You know, it wasn't an overconfidence thing by any measure that, you know, we're going to come in here and steamroll this thing. But there was never a point where hope was lost on the East Carolina sideline, and not just in the Peach Bowl, but throughout the whole season. That was kind of the narrative that we went on. And that's where the I believe was birthed, that, you know, it starts here between the ears, and that's what we had going on the sideline. So, yep, looked dire, but, you know, we put it in the hands of the people that can make plays, and they did it for us, and the rest is history.
What are your memories of that on-the-field celebration with all those purple and gold-clad fans rushing the field? And one of the biggest things I remember is just – the turf that was coming up, and my dad, obviously it's deteriorated at this point. It's just a bag of nothing but dirt, but you can still see a little purple tint to it that we got from the end zone.
So that was awesome. You know, I don't think, I guess at Pitt, you know, when we beat Pitt at home and came toward the goalpost down, so that was pretty cool, but nowhere near the chaos that was going on in Atlanta that day. So it was, I mean, you know, those are the things that as a player you always dream about, stuff like that happening, you know, just being swamped by the fans after a huge win. And that's exactly what it was. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, did they tear the goalpost down in Atlanta too? It was chaos on the field. But I remember Luke Fisher was – people were coming up to him asking for autographs. He was signing his knee pads and thigh pads and hip pads and handing them out. It was insane. It was insane out there.
Yeah, I like you're saying. I remember players, especially now. Your larger players, like offensive and defensive linemen over there, guys like a Nick Wilson or what have you. By the end zone, that wall was fairly high, and I remember my dad getting down and helping me down. I was only 9 at the time, but I guess 10. But yeah. Players helping their families and other Pirate fans down, but unbelievable memories. And you know, as we're winding this down, you know, tell Pirate Nation what you're up to now, because I know you're originally from Spruce Pine up in the mountains, but now you're living in Davidson, not too far from me, probably 20 or 25 minutes from China Grove here in the greater Charlotte area.
Yeah, so been in the North Mecklenburg area for 20 some years now. My two boys are seniors in high school, so they're looking to East Carolina's on the list. So we might have some future Pirates down there from the Burnett clan. But from a work perspective, I have the opportunity to lead a technical sales overlay team for Spectrum Enterprise here in Charlotte. And so that's a lot of fun. It's there's a coaching element to it. There's a competitive element to it. So we win. We try to win every month. And it's a lot of fun. I got a great team and really enjoy working with them. Still married to my bride of 22 years. And, you know, I have no complaints, Bubba. It's been an awesome ride here since I left East Carolina. And, you know, I love the place. It was great to be back this past weekend and just be a part of it again. So I would like to say real quick, just for all the Pirate Club folks out there that our members and contribute, and all the folks that show up and support the program in any form or fashion, you know, from a former player, I just want to thank them for all they do and the sacrifice they make, because it does make a difference. You might not see it or realize it, but I can tell you from a former player's perspective that your presence, you know, your support in any form or fashion, whatever that looks like, really makes a difference. So thank you.
No doubt about it. Very well said. And that's something that a lot of folks, you know, they question, you know, why give? It's things like what you just said, you know, here 30 years later, I guess, and obviously even, you know, pushing 35 years since you began your career at East Carolina, and you're so appreciative of the opportunity that the Pirate Club and all the donors provided you with an athletic scholarship. And so, folks, if you're wondering why to give, there you hear it firsthand from a former athlete. Ken, really appreciate your time this afternoon. Would love to have you back on the show sometime to break down the action on the field and talk about the Pirates present day.
Well, thank you, Bubba. I appreciate your time as well and inviting me in for this special 30-year edition, and I'd be happy to join you anytime. So just let me know what works.